Welcome to this week's episode of Zen Founder. This week I'm flying solo. Sherry and I are experiencing some personal complications in our lives, and it's not between she and I. It's complexities that have arisen that are making our lives complicated. And, you know, in addition to losing a nanny about 6 or 8 weeks ago, we've had enough other things come up that we are just kind of running in all directions and just trying to keep the ship afloat. And we will talk about this time period in specifics, but there's kind of a specific reason that we can't do it right now. We need to kind of keep things under wraps. So, you know, stay tuned here in the next couple months, and we'll be able to really go into depth and into detail about what we're going through right now. But suffice to say, it's one of the more complicated times of our lives, and it's the hard thing about hard things. It's about kind of grinding it out right now and putting in the work and getting things done. So with that, I'm going to be talking today about putting in the work and talk about how being a founder is much like being a, you know, a parent or being a spouse. And there's a lot of hard work, but the payoff can be great at the end. So let's dive in.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
Overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
We know this woman, non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode. So today I'm talking about putting in the work. And, you know, one example of this that's kind of interesting is you think even about launching a podcast, and you think that Sherry and I launched Zen Founder a couple years ago. And I was just looking through our reviews in iTunes, and we have 49 worldwide reviews. One of the most recent ones was from August. It says, a great show for startups. Thanks for providing a great show for founders. Another one says, founder origin stories are awesome. It's amazing to hear the stories and backgrounds of these heroes of industry and how a lot of them have channeled very difficult backgrounds into fuel for success. And that was from Spork It Over. And, you know, these things, when I read them, they make me feel good. And, you know, Sherry and I will sometimes read through them in the evening when we're kind of feeling down and realizing, you know, thinking our lives are going nowhere and we don't know what we want to be when we grow up. And when you read through these, you can tell that we're able to have an impact on people's lives, which is a big deal. But we didn't get there overnight. And you could say it took us 2 years to get there, but you could also go back and say, you know, Sherry had a podcast before this. So there was another 2 years of time. And then she has a PhD in psychology. So that took 8 years. Well, I guess it was 6 years plus the 4 years of her bachelor's degree. And from my side, I started writing code when I was eight. I started entrepreneurship, aspiring to do it in 2000, had my first dollar of revenue in 2005. And so, you know, for me, maybe it's 17 years in the making. And what I've seen, and what I think a very common thread is that you don't get here without putting in the work. You don't get here without showing up every day or every week and writing that blog post or shipping that podcast, even when it's hard. You know, this week's a great example. Sherry and I are just trying to get everything covered, childcare covered, be able to ship the book when we want to. As you know, Sherry and I are working on a book about founder mental health and just running a business. And we just literally can't find 45 minutes this week where we can both sit down and record a podcast. But one of us is going to put in the work. You know, and today it's me, but another week it'll be Sherry. And I think that the thing that strikes me is that so many of the stories that I read and hear, whether it's the blog post touting the, you know, $100,000 launch, whether it's the podcast that you listen to interviewing someone on, you know, whatever podcast, you know, the Saster podcast or venture-backed podcast, whether it's reading In Ink magazine, whether it's watching Shark Tank. And frankly, I'm a fan of all these things. You know, I listen to all these things I'm quoting, which is why I know how they're presented. But I do feel like a lot of them they skip over the years of hard work that it took someone to get somewhere. What I actually appreciated, you know, what I do appreciate it is certain books don't skip over it. And those books are agonizing. There's a difference between reading Hatching Twitter, which is one of my favorite books of all time. I listened to it on audiobook probably 3 or 4 times. It's by Nick Bilton. Highly, highly, highly recommended if you have not listened to it or read it. It's an amazing story of Hatching Twitter. But there's nowhere in there that talks about the grinding of the hours and the anxiety and the stress. I shouldn't say there's nowhere in there, but it's not the focus of the book. It really is about telling the tale. And that's fair because Nick Pilton is a journalist and he's trying to tell the tale. So I'm not taking anything away from him or from that book. But when you compare that to a book called The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz, and Horowitz is the co-founder of Andreessen Horowitz, which is now a VC-backed fund. But he basically started a company and grew it and sold it for, I can't remember exactly, it was more than $1 billion. It was agonizing. Every minute of that book. In fact, I have not been able to listen to that book again because it made me so stressed out just hearing what he had to go through to do that. And that has been my experience of entrepreneurship. Not all the time, not in the early days, especially when I was solo founder and I had these little businesses and they were doing their thing. It wasn't stressful. But when you step into the world of starting to compete with other people or having any type of time constraints, so pre-kids, this wasn't that hard. Pre-getting married, it wasn't that hard. Pre, you know, having real amounts of money at risk and being paying people's mortgages. Honestly, for me, it was not that hard. But once I moved into this place where I'm married and I have kids, I'm trying to balance life and I have time constraints. I can't work 7 hours a week anymore. And, you know, potentially mismanage cash flow like I did in 2014. I can talk a little more about that later, but that's when this stuff can get really, really hard. And it depends a lot on how you deal with stress and how you're able to channel anxiety. But I think the thing about putting in the work is that it is years of hard work to build anything great. I think the only person I can think of who has made a lot of money, aside from hitting the lottery, is, you remember the guy who invented the $1 million homepage? MillionDollarHomepage.com. I mean, it's just almost like a lottery ticket, right? He took a crack at something and it got a bunch of press and then he made $1 million. But he didn't build something great, right? He didn't build something meaningful. And I say that partially as a joke. It's like the folks, all of the folks, like 100% of the people I know who have built things that I think are interesting, that I respect, that have made them independently wealthy, that have changed their life, that have allowed them to quit their jobs, that have allowed them to become multimillionaires and fund their kids' college fund and you know, do all the stuff that I think we all aspire to do to have that freedom at some point. They've all put in years of hard work. And hard means it's not easy. I was talking to a founder 2 weeks ago. I was at our couples retreat, the Zen Founder Couples Retreat we had here in Minneapolis. And this founder told me that he's eased off now and he's taking things a little bit easier and he's hiring more people to help him. But that for the first couple years of his business that he worked 70-hour weeks. And I was not surprised by that. I know this founder, I've known him for several years, and it's not unexpected the amount of product that he was shipping, that just the quantity of high value, you know, content and stuff he was shipping to his customers and his prospects. I knew that he had to be putting in a tremendous amount of work. And, you know, we talked that night, I've mentioned this, that kind of my mantra is relentless execution. And it's to execution means you're working, and relentless means you show up every day to do it. And, you know, I understand that relentless execution may not resonate with everyone. It may not resonate with you. It's a very, you know, it's kind of an aggressive, it's kind of a push forward, it's kind of do the hard work type of thing. And so you don't necessarily have to take that on and think, boy, I need to relentlessly execute because Rob says it. But for me, it's been a motivator of, you know, I need to show up every day and put something out. I need to show up every week and put something out. Now, I don't like to play hard. I think that's kind of cheesy. I actually like to really take it easy and go, you know, to the coast and relax and have a glass of wine and read books. So I don't think relentless means all the time. I do think it means that you're focused and aggressive about pushing stuff out when you need to, and that you do show up consistently over the course of months and years. I think that's the important part. That's what I'm thinking about when I talk about, you know, putting in the work. And I had stretches of 60, 70-hour weeks. I never did it for 2 years straight. But early on, you know, when I was working 40 to 50 hours a week during the day as a consultant to pay the bills and to kind of stash money away, and then I would easily work 15 to 20 hours a week in the evenings and nights. It was easier before we had kids. Once we started having them, I still did it, but it got harder and harder. And so I like to think of entrepreneurship as these ebbs and flows. You know, it's like a pendulum swinging, and there are going to be times when you're going to have to put in, especially early on, extended periods of long hours if you have a day job. And then it swings back. And at a certain point, you can kind of relax for a little bit, and you can kind of reap what you've sown, you know, in a positive way, and enjoy the spoils of your labors. And then I feel like things tick back again, and either, you know, Google gives you a slap or a competitor competitor comes out with a new feature, or just something sets you back, or you want to get more aggressive, or, you know, with your growth, or you're bored, or you want to do that next thing, and then you got to swing back. And the second, third, and, you know, four subsequent times that I had to put in the hard work, they were a lot shorter. I had a lot more resources at my back at that point. I had more experience, more confidence. I had more money to hire people. I knew how to hire and manage a lot better. So for me, I never did those years of long hours anymore. You know, I think when I acquired Hittail in 2011, I did maybe 2 months, 3 months. And it was still hard work. And I prepared Sherry for it and talked it through about what it was going to look like. But 3 months in, I was able to back way off and get back to my, you know, my normal work schedule, which at the time was pretty consistent. 30 to 40 hours a week is what I worked for years. So you do get the luxury as you go on, if you choose to not have to put in as much work as you did in the early days. And it's interesting, you know, on Startups for the Rest of Us, my other podcast where we talk a lot about tactics and growing startups and stuff, we get a question every few months from, you know, a different person, but it's kind of the form, hey, my job is pretty sweet. I think I want to be an entrepreneur, but I'm not really sure if I should. Can you help me out? And my answer is always the same. It's, you don't want it bad enough. And that's okay. I don't mean that like in an insulting way of like, oh, somehow we're, you know, certain people are blessed to be founders and we are the ones that have the power to do it, because I don't believe that at all. But you have to want it more than probably most other things in your life. You know, I think you need to want this, like, you know, if you were an athlete in school, like you wanted to win. That's how bad you need to want this. If you're married, in my opinion, you need to want this like you want to stay married, because these are hard things that people quit. You know, people quit sports in college and high school. People quit their marriages and they get divorced. People quit starting companies because it's hard and they shut down their company. So I'm not trying to equate all of these things in terms of equal difficulty, but order of magnitude wise, you know, comparing working a day job to going out and starting a company, there's a lot more satisfaction, I believe, in starting a company, but there's 10 times more stress, you know? There's just so much more you have to deal with and so much more that you're going to encounter. So again, I'm not saying that entrepreneurship is like the end all be all of this, but if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably in some place where you know you have to put in the hard work, and it does get hard to grind it out. I mean, that's what this is, can be at times. You know, it's not always the sexy Shark Tank, you know, 40-minute vignette that looks like somebody came up with an idea and then 30 minutes later they were standing in front of the sharks. I like it when Shark Tank actually shows people who said, I've been trying to get into Shark Tank for 3 years and I've put in, you know, all my time or a bunch of my, you know, nights and weekends doing this. I like it when stories tell that side of it. And I think it's trying to keep a balance too. I'm not, you know, again, I'm not saying that all entrepreneurship sucks and it's all about hard work forever and you do this until you die, because it's that pendulum swing again, you know, but it's just being willing to do it when the time comes. Those are the founders I know who have started and grown businesses consistently and who get things done and who are able to kind of reap the benefits of what they've sown. Something else I kind of want to talk about, it's related to this, and it's stress. Because not only is this hard work, but it's going to be stressful at times, no matter how hard you try to make it not stressful. It's going to stress relationships. This happened to me during my acquisition. I was so stressed out that I was stressed out at the kids. I was stressed out at Sherry. I was stressed out at friends. It's going to stress your finances, or it can, if you do like I did in 2014 and mismanage your cash. And then that was all stressful for 10 months as I sorted that out. And it could even stress kind of your own internal clock, even if you're not stressed about finances and you're not stressed, you know, maybe you're not in a relationship, but it can kind of dim your outlook. It's like I've had times where I'm just so tired and so burned out that my outlook on life degrades. Working 7 hours a week, I just will wake up and kind of, you can feel hopeless at times. You can feel pissed off all the time. You know, it depends on how it comes out of you, but it's going to kind of stress your body and your own emotional abilities to deal with it. And so I think that is obviously a lot of what Sherry, you know, that's where her expertise comes in. That's where a lot of her MicroConf talks talk about. We've talked about it on this podcast. If you search the archives for stress, we do talk about that. But putting in the work and being able to deal with stress, I feel like are the two kind of entrepreneurial superpowers. It's like staying motivated while you're stressed and being able to sustain motivation for extended periods of time. And so on this topic of putting in the work, I was trying to think of a time, you know, where I could just talk about a real example of, you know, just one specific anecdote of hard work that I put in. And I remembered this blog post I published years ago, and I think it was probably late 2011. And the blog post is called There and Back Again, How a Seemingly Well-Planned Server Move Crashed, Burned, and Rose from the Ashes. And when I wrote this, I remember, I think it went to number 2 on Hacker News or something. And this was about when I acquired Hittail and revamped it. And it was specifically about an all-nighter that I pulled with a DBA after, this was several months of 60 to 70 hour weeks trying to revamp Hittail, which was a SaaS app. It is a SaaS app for SEO keyword research. And I later grew this. This was kind of a life-changing economic event for me. You know, my income grew to a point where we had more money than we needed. And it was, we'd always had a little bit more than we needed, but this is where we really tipped the scale to where it was like, wow, this was life-changing. But I didn't know that at the time. And I was knee-deep in pouring all my money and my time into it. And this was the tale of a particular, I think it was a weekend where we had to roll the database. I'll get into it in the post. But it just kind of captures that moment of like putting in the work. And this is, you know, just a 24 or 48 hour period that this blog post is about. But you get the idea that I'm fatigued, I'm tired. And this kind of stuff is what I was doing for several months there. And I was willing to do it because I had hoped the goal would be, you know, I'd hoped I would achieve the goal of having a life-changing outcome. And this is where I think that people should ask themselves, like, are you willing to do this? You know, are you willing to really grind it out and do hard things? Because in my belief, this is what it takes to really succeed as an entrepreneur. So I'll begin with the post here. About 8 months ago, I acquired a small startup called Hittail. You can read more about the acquisition here. And I linked to, I had a series of blog posts called The Inside Story of a Small Startup Acquisition. When the deal closed, the app was in bad shape. Within 3 weeks, I had to move the entire operation, including a large database, to new servers. This required my first all-nighter in a while. Here's an excerpt of an email I sent to a friend the morning of September 16th, 2011, at 6:47 in the morning. And the subject was my first all-nighter in years. And I said, wow, I'm tired. Worst part is my kids are going to be up in the next half hour. This is going to hurt. But Hittail is on a new server and it seems to be running really well. Feels great to have it within my control. There's still a couple pieces left on the old server, but they are less important and I'll have them moved within a week. I'll write again in a few hours with the whole story. It's insane how many things went wrong. What follows is the tale of that long night. The setup. I acquired Hittail in late August and it was in bad shape. I had three priorities I wanted to hit hard and fast in the following order. Number one, stability. Before I acquired it, the site went down every few months, sometimes for several days on end. To stabilize it, I needed to move it to new servers, fix a few major bugs, and move 250 gigs of data, approximately 1.2 billion rows. Number two, plug the funnel. Conversion rates were terrible. I needed to look at each step of the process and figure out how to improve the percentage of people making it to the next step. And number three, spread the word. Market it. The first order of business was to move to new servers, which involved overnighting 250 gigs of data on a USB drive to the new hosting facility, restoring from backup, setting up database replication until the databases were in sync, taking everything offline for 2 to 3 hours to merge two servers into one, test everything, and flip the switch. If only it was that simple. Thursday morning, 10 a.m., an untimely crash. We'd planned to take the old servers offline at 10 p.m. Pacific on Thursday, but around 10 a.m., one of them went down. The server itself was working, but the hard drive was failing and it wouldn't serve web requests. I received a few emails from customers asking why the server was down, and I was able to explain that this should be the last downtime for many months. Everyone was appreciative and supportive, but I spent most of the day trying to get the servers to stay alive for 12 more hours with no luck. Half of the users had no access to it for the final 12 hours on the old servers. And a quick insert here to give you context. There were, for some reason, they had sharded it into two islands. And so half the customers were on one server and half on another. It didn't need to be that way, but that's why. That's what was going on. That was pretty stressful, actually, because I was all geared up to do this big thing. And then it just starts failing in the morning. It was crazy. So back to the blog post. Thursday afternoon, 2 p.m. Where's the data? We had meticulously planned to have all the data replicated between the old and the new database to ensure they would be in sync when we went to perform the migration, but there was a problem. Replication had silently failed about 48 hours beforehand, and neither myself or my DBA noticed. So at 2 p.m., we realized we were literally gigs behind the synchronization. With only 8 hours until the migration window began, we zipped up these gigs and started copying them from server to server. The dialogue said it would take 5.5 hours. No problem. We had 2.5 hours of leeway, which is my way of saying, OMG, I was totally panicked. Thursday night, 8 p.m., copy and paste. My DBA checked on the copying a few times in the middle of his night. He's in the UK. and it eventually failed with 10% remaining. At that point, we knew that even if we got everything done according to plan, we wouldn't have the data for the most recent 48 hours. Grr. In a last-ditch effort to get the data across the wire, we selected the info from a single table that changes the most, and we copied it to the new server, which took only around 5 minutes. The problem was this data should have been processed by our fancy keyword suggestion algorithm, and it hadn't been. Friday morning, 1 a.m., panic sets in. It was about this time I began to panic. Trying to process the data using existing code was not going to happen. The algorithm is written in a mix of JavaScript and classic ASP, which couldn't be executed in the same fashion that it is when the app runs under normal conditions. And it wouldn't run fast enough to process the millions of rows that it needed in any realistic amount of time. So I did one of the craziest things I've done in a while. I spent 4 hours from approximately 11 p.m. until 3 a.m. writing a Windows Forms app that combined the JavaScript and classic ASP into a single assembly, with the JavaScript being compiled directly into a .NET DLL that I referenced from C# code. I cannot believe I did this. Then I translated the classic ASP, which was VBScript, into C#, and I prayed it would work, and I used an online translator to do that. Wow, this is like a ridiculous tale. I can't believe I did this, honestly. And after 2 hours of coding and 2 hours of execution, it finally worked, and the keyword algorithm worked, and I was able to plunk it into the database. Friday morning, 3 a.m., it gets worse. During this time, the DBA was trying to merge two databases, copying 75 million rows of data from one DB to another. This was supposed to take 3 to 5 hours based on tests we had run, but it was taking 20 times longer. The disks were insanely slow because we were running during our web host backup window, and some of the data was on a shared SAN. By 3 a.m., when we should have been wrapping up the entire process, we were 10% done with the 75 million rows. By 6 a.m., we had to make a call. It was already 9 a.m. on the East Coast, and customers would surely be logging in soon if they hadn't already. I was exhausted and at my wits' end with the number of unexpected failures, and I asked my DBA what our options were. After some discussion, we decided to re-enable the application so users could access it, but continue copying the 75 million rows, but with a forced sleep so the app could run with surprisingly little performance impact. It took 4 days for all the data to copy, but we didn't receive a single complaint in the meantime. And as a note here, luckily those 75 million rows were like, it was old data. So Hittail was giving you new suggestions all the time. And if you went back 6 months or a year, that's where the data was that was missing. It wasn't the most recent stuff. So back to the post. Lucky for us, no one noticed. And the app running on the new hardware was 2 to 3 times more responsive than on the old setup. Friday morning, 6:45 a.m., victory. After some final testing, I logged off at 6:45 a.m. Friday morning with a huge sigh of relief. I dashed off the email you read in the intro, then headed to bed to be awoken by my kids an hour later. Needless to say, I had a big glass of wine the following night. Building a startup isn't all the fun you read about on Hacker News and TechCrunch. Sometimes it's even better. So I hope you enjoyed that little diversion. Obviously, no tactics in that other than to put in the work. I mean, if you think about that night, it was just one struggle and one roadblock, one hurdle thrown up in front of me after another. And it was just do what it takes to get it done. I think it's a pretty interesting analogy for entrepreneurship in general. And, you know, if you were to zoom in on that, and instead of every hour I was having trouble, you look at every 2 months, you're going to have trouble as an entrepreneur. Every 2 years, you're going to have trouble. I mean, I think it's a pretty interesting fractal of what we see when running a company. So again, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I don't expect that me doing solo episodes is anywhere near the new pattern on Zen Founder. Sherry and I fully intend to get back to our normal schedule of she and I talking about stuff and doing interviews and offering tactics and all the things that we've traditionally offered. But as I mentioned, there's some extenuating circumstances right now, and we hope to see you guys again soon. In the meantime, we have a lot going on in terms of wrapping up the Zen Founder book, The Entrepreneur's Guide to Staying Sane While Starting or Running a Business. And Sherry's also running Zen Tribes pretty frequently, which are, you know, in essence, 8-week groups, remote groups held over Zoom. And there's themed ones where there are people who are running agencies getting together. And it's kind of like, it's more than a mastermind. It's once a week and people are led through a curriculum that Sherry has developed. It's about how to deal with the stress. It's about how to deal with interpersonal things. It's about how to stay sane while you're running your business and how to kind of optimize your performance by keeping yourself mentally healthy. So if you're interested in that, or even just keeping up with what's going on with Sherry and I really do encourage you to head over to zenfounder.com and sign up for our mailing list. We don't email very much, and we just like to stay in touch with folks who are interested in hearing what we're up to. as well as give you sneak peeks of the new content, the interesting things that we're doing and talking about. So thanks again for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.